5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening. It is, I've got to check, it's the 3rd of February, good Lord, 2022, and it is the new Panic Room episode 262. So it's all twos. Except it's the third. It's funny, if I actually sent an email yesterday and it was at 22 minutes past eight, so it's 2022, 2020, and it's the second of the set, and I was just all giddy. I really need to get out more, to be honest with you, but for what? You know, everybody's out there wearing their masks and looking at me like I'm some sort of freak because I don't wear my mask in Kroger. You know, so obviously, you know, to wear it properly in Kroger, you've got to wear it just below the nose, because obviously the virus is scared of your mouth not being seen, apparently. So that's how that works. Anywho. It is. And I have missed her this week. God bless her. We don't speak as much as we should, but I'm going to bring her on. Yeehaw, Christina. How are you? This cold, cold evening?
I'm just peachy. No, you know, everybody's talking about the cold thing that were happening, and yeah, it's pretty mild today. It's rainy all day, I can say that, but it's not been cold at all. I put on a sweater, and then I'm in the car going, I'm a little warm right now, so I don't think we're going to see too much of it, which, you know, we had a bunch of snow, all right, I mean, a bunch for Tennessee, but so I'm happy. Like, I'm not like, oh, I miss the snow, I really want to see it. I am done with snow for the year, so, you know,
really?
It passes us by. Yeah, I can't wait, yeah. I mean,
this is Texas, you know, it also is Houston, and it's funny because it's like panic. You know, it's going to get to 37. I mean, you know, that's the day at the seaside where I'm from, back in Yorkshire, 37. You take your coat off, you're not feeling the benefit. And it's just, you know, people are panicking. I think part of it is we remember
last year
was the big freeze, and it was pretty horrendous last year. That was awful. So I kind of get it. You know, but it's funny, somebody actually, one of my Facebook friends actually put, you know, on Facebook, you know, quick panic, it's winter. It's kind of supposed to be a bit cold. To be fair, I mean, you know, this is huge. We get like a week of winter. And I actually said to somebody today, I said, you know, this time next week we'll be complaining it's too bloody hot.
You can't do it.
It's too hot. You know, it's like, make your mind up.
Can't win.
Seriously, no.
You know, I'm kind of the same way. I absolutely hate the heat. Like the you know, so many years in Florida will do that to you. I can't stand it. It makes me angry. But then it's
only, you get angry at the weather.
Yeah.
You get angry at the weather. Weather, how dare you?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, my daughter's pretty much the same way, and it's even funnier with her. She gets mad if she's almost sweating. She'll be like, oh, I am almost sweating.
Just back up. You're either sweating or you're not. How are you almost sweating? And how do you know? What is the moment of pre-sweating?
You know, I will have to ask her. Maybe we'll have her on the show and we'll ask her the questions.
We can have a show
I'm not
all
sure
about.
Either.
Well, to be fair, what we could do, we could have Harriet, we could have Prince Andrew, because obviously, you know, he's You know, he's all about sweating at the moment. You know, so it could be. Who knows?
It'd be a fun show, yeah. So, you know, I just spend the whole summer, you know, I can't wait until fall. And then, you know, so, and then winter comes, and I love the cold, but I love the cold from my warm house. Like, I don't want to go out in it. I just want to, like, stare out the window at, you know, mm-hmm. Oh, it looks cold out there. You know?
Yeah, oh, I'm glad I'm not out in that.
yes. But then if I have to go out, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to wear socks. I have to put my boots on. I have to wear a shirt and a sweater, too, and a coat. Oh, God. That's
oh,
just,
my
know,
goodness.
So.
I mean, is it worth it? Is it worth it? You know, I don't go anywhere anyway, you know. We'll hunker down. We'll turn the heating up to, 74. You know, to be fair, more for the dog's benefit. Because they just look at me like, oh, it's and trying to get them to go out.
Yes.
You know,
oh, my gosh,
that's awful. It's funny, the pit bull is just like, she just looks, it's funny, you know, the other dogs are not the last to go out, and they will go out. The puppies try it on, but you say, puppies, and they go out. The pit bull, I said, are you going out? And she just sits. She just sit down like... No, I'm not. And the one time I actually, just because they always go out for their before bedtime, you know, toilets. And the one time I gave in, I said, oh, you know, it's horrible. And yeah, I woke up the next morning to a bloody great big dump in the corner of my bedroom that she did. And she was all fussy. What is it? Oh, no. What is that? And she was all fussy. She's on the bed licking my face and fussy like, I don't know who did that. Someone broke in down here. Somebody broke in and pooed on the carpet. So I don't get it, but, you know. But, our oldest dog, he just loves going out. He doesn't get what the way. He can be peeing it down with the rain, cold. He just loves going. But, obviously... It's a measure of how cold it is outside to how long he stays out. So measure it, and there's probably some correlation between how long he's out. Because at the moment today he's like out for 5 minutes, does what he needs to do, and comes back in. But so it is. Like I say, this time next week we'll be moaning it's too damned hot. So that's how it goes.
So enjoy
here.
It. Enjoy it. Yes. So. I'm not going to complain too much.
I don't have a lot of plans, to be honest. I mean, you know, trips to grocery stores that's sadly a trip out for me these days. But it's funny, I have one of these with my insurance company, all these little things on my car that measures my drive. So I get a discount, I get like an 8% discount. A bit little helps, right? You know. And they actually messaged me, so we think your beacon's not working. Can you check it out? Because he's only showed 12 trips in the last month. And that's it.
That's
all I've done. It's not broken.
Yeah.
It's not broken. No. It's me that's broken. It's a bit sad, really, isn't it?
Well, the thing is when you go outside, there's, like, people out there, and we have to interact with them, and most of the time, that's just no fun anymore. I mean, people have just awful.
No, you're right. No, I don't care. I don't care much for people. You know me. I don't. Not really a people person. You know, I just don't like, no. I had a cleaner, so my cleaner came around, because I just didn't like having somebody in the house. I'll do it myself. I'll clean it myself. Because she came and I felt like she was going to be like, you know, 3, maybe 4 hours. She was here all damn day. And I'm working. You know, I didn't stop me working. I'd be just like having somebody in the house. And I thought, no, I don't like this. I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, my daughter, she just got a job recently where she's cleaning houses, and she really likes it. And she came over last week and was cleaning here like she would do at one of those houses. And I did not know what to do. Like, I'm like, what are you supposed to do when someone's cleaning your house? I mean, part of me wanted to get up and help clean, but the other part was like, no, it's the weekend. I'm not doing anything this weekend. So I just, like, kind of sat there uncomfortably. Like, you know, am I supposed to talk to you or what? It was really kind of awkward.
Exactly, yeah.
But it was
what
nice.
Do you do? How does this work?
Am I supposed to tip you now? I don't understand.
Yeah, I presume you're paid. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, no, but it was nice getting my house cleaned. That was, and I didn't have to do it. That was amazing. So I might have to get some budget going for this service. I liked it. It was fun. Mm-hmm.
Right, anywho, we have we have a show, I presume. I know we do, because
yes.
we cheated a bit and we did pre-record it. So you tell the listener what we've got going on?
Yes, I will. Well, see, as soon as you push the button, I introduce the guest again. So this can be kind of like, you know, saying it twice. But I was very,
yeah,
very excited and... And well, and I did pronounce his name wrong the first time, so I'll try to get it right this time. But we have the award-winning horror author Paul Tremblay, and it was a great show. It was, so I can't wait to sit back and sip my wine and listen to the segment that we pre-recorded.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for us to be entertained a little bit. So, okay, without further ado, I'm going to hit the button. Yes, you get to introduce Paul again, and we get to be entertained, which is a rare treat for us, isn't it? Okay, here we go.
It is. Tonight on The Panic Room, we have award-winning horror author Paul Tremblay. Woo!
Paul,
thank
you. We haven't spoken before, have we?
No, that was a wonderful applause. Man, I wish I had that any time I entered a room.
I can send you the clip if you want, Amici.
Okay, yeah, I'm also good to have on my phone just to press randomly, especially for if I walk into my classroom and the kids groan at me.
Brilliant.
I just play the applause instead.
Well, I don't know if you're a Family Guy fan. They had one episode ages ago now where Peter had, he found a genie bottle, and one of his wishes was to have his own soundtrack. So everywhere he went, he had this music soundtrack. Brilliant, great idea. We should all have our own soundtrack. That'd be fantastic. Like you say, a cheer every time you come in the room. I always like the cheer, you know, like when you used to watch like Happy Days, you know, when the Fonz used to, and because it was done in front of a studio audience, and you used to get that. I would have loved that. If real life was like that, wouldn't that be brilliant?
Absolutely.
You have people cheering and whooping and whoa, oh, and all the rest of it. We should do that. You know, we should have that. Although the problem is now, because nobody goes anywhere, so you just do it yourself in your own home, which a little bit sad, to be honest.
We all do what we have to do to get through these days, so I might just start that. And woo, Christina into the room, you know.
Woo, yeah, woo,
so, yeah.
And every time you have a serious conversation with a boyfriend, ooh, like that. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I love sitcoms, and but don't ever concentrate on the piped-in laughter, because that's all you'll hear, and then it just draws attention to how absolutely fake it is. I mean, most of the time it just blends into the background, but sometimes if you pay attention, you're like, oh, man, that sounds exactly the same every time. It's just awful.
Well, you know, somebody put out an episode of Big Bang Theory, which I'm, to be fair, I'm a big fan, but without the laughter track, and it was just, like, not funny. It was just so flat. So we need something to tell us when we're supposed to laugh, which is crazy. But you think of some of the best, I'm thinking of The Office, and the British version of The Office, I think Fawlty Towers, Monty Python, didn't have laugh tracks. And they stood, you know, they stood the test of time without that. So maybe not, but I think maybe it's the sort of, that they're not that funny, but you laugh because of the laughter. And it's funny, I always chuckled at Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm, chuckled at it. But yeah, I watched that episode without a laugh track, and it was like, why do I watch this again?
Yeah. You know, I read somewhere that the canned laughter is from, it's like really, really old, and those people are probably not with us anymore, so you're actually listening
that's awful.
Creepy.
So you're listening to the laughter of dead people. That is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, you've ruined everything for me now. You've ruined all sitcoms for although, to be fair, I tend not to watch the sitcoms that have the have laughter tracks. That's not really my thing. So Big Bang was... It's funny, the spin-off, Young Sheldon, which is tremendous, doesn't have a laugh track, and but it stands out without it. But anyway, enough talk of sitcoms. Paul isn't here to discuss it. You're more than welcome. He's here to discuss his book, The Cabin at the End of the World, with the tagline, The Apocalypse Maybe Begins with a Home Invasion. Did I read that right, or has Xena written it down wrong?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, The Apocalypse it's more like maybe begins with a Home Invasion.
Oh.
Like it may or may not be an actual
apocalypse. You have me intrigued. Do tell us more.
Oh, boy. So, without spoiling too much of it, even though, this novel came out in 2018, the main idea is that there's a young family, two men and their adopted daughter are vacationing in northern New Hampshire, and they purposely rented a cabin in the middle of northern New Hampshire, sort of out of cell phone reach, because they wanted to unplug, and I wanted to have a horror novel.
Right.
And so they're up at this cabin, and four strangers sort of arrive. And, strangers shouldn't be arriving, and certainly not by foot, and they arrive by foot from what they can tell, because this cabin is, a couple of miles in through a dirt road. And the strangers have, a really awful sort of predicament that they present to the family. And I don't want to, go too far into it from there, but they're sort of the question that they pose, they claim that the end of the world is sort of at stake.
I have to say, I'm reading it right now. I was trying to finish before I talked to you, but I have not got there quite yet because I don't have any time to read. But I love the writing. I really do, and I love the characters.
Thank you.
You know, your two main guys. They're so real, and the thoughts. I like a well-rounded characters. I really do. You know, people that you can they just feel real. You know, and so I'm really enjoying the writing. I'm trying my hardest not to skip around to the end to figure out what's going to happen, because right now I'm not sure and I want to know.
Right.
So and it's funny because I'm one of those people that have to absolutely, really force myself not to keep going. And it's so bad that I actually, I'll put my hands on the page I'm not reading just so my eyes can't skip ahead. So
you just lack self-discipline, Xtina. I think that's your problem.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just recently my son was asking why there are so many books set in, and this one is contemporary, so it's not like it's, set in, the 80s or something, but he did question why there are so many books set, 10, 15 years ago. But it is because, they're not so attached to their cell phone, or, it's a lot easier to have a horror story when you can't pick up your phone and dial 911. So I thought that was a, interesting for being out in the cabin.
Well, I mean, for me, it's tailored to the story. I think even R.L. Stein, I won't say bad things about him, but obviously he was tongue-in-cheek when he said, the horror story died and with cell phones, which is clearly not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the novels previous to Cabin, both A Head Full of Ghosts and Disappearance of Devil's Rock, sort of embrace modern technology and weaves it into part of the horror of the story. And I would even say similar, my most recent novel, which was Survivor Song. Instead of talking about Survivor Song, I wanted to talk about Cabin, because I hadn't talked about that in a while. But, you know, Survivor Song is set in the near, well, at the time it was the near future where a pandemic was raging, and I wrote it before coronavirus. For me as a horror writer, I'm usually embrace sort of what's happening in the moment, because, you know, I'm more focused on trying to, like, move the readers of now. And to me, like, if, you know, you mentioned, like, the characters were realistic, which I really appreciate. Like, that's sort of what I guess what I try to do. It's like, I try to, whatever horror idea I have, I try to make it seem as realistic as possible, or what it would feel like if I imagined if this was really happening, trying to make that as real as possible. So if it's happening now, there's going to have to be mentions of cell phones and texting and Twitter and all that stuff.
Right.
Even in this
right.
book, even though there's no cell phone, there's certainly references to the outside world and what may or may not be happening.
Now, so here's a question. Here's a question. Again, it's something I'm working on a project at the moment, and one that is based like now, and it has to be because it is very, it's one of these. It's based around the, you know, the whole deep fake thing and how technology is really starting to. So it is as contemporary as it gets. And the problem is, you know, as I'm writing it, it's the whole thing is actually leaping ahead of where the book is.
Right.
But obviously, because it's now, we made the decision to include, obviously, COVID and masks and all of that, which, is that going to date it in 5 years' time? Or, you know, we might still be wearing the damn masks in 5 years' time, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, how do you tackle that? Do you just ignore? Because I'm seeing how TV shows are coming up based in now and in last year, and they just totally ignore it. Absolutely, totally ignore the whole thing.
Well, I mean, so like a TV show is different than a book. Like a book has its own, you know, most of these TV shows, they're not period pieces. They're presumed to be taking place now, right? Unless it's obviously like a science fiction show or if it's something like Bridgerton. So I guess I'm dismissing that. But like, so for, I don't know, for me, I really don't worry about like, is this going to seem dated? I think way too many horror writers worry about, and writers maybe even in general, I think, but it seems especially for horror writers for some reason, they worry about the idea of deathless prose. For one, like, man, it's hard enough to write something that people are going to read today. Like, I'm not worried about if it's going to be read 5, 10, 50 years from now, like 50 years from now when whatever is left of humanity, like insectoid, cockroach-like creatures. And part of the reason why I don't worry about it is because if I do my job now, you know, people talk about world building. So this is a book of that time period. You know, this is the book of, you know, this is a story that takes place in 2015. If you do your job right, you know, or 2018 when Cabin comes out. So this is a book of that time and place. Not everything has to be about, or it has to fit into, like, you know, what is in the moment. You know, I think of something like, and I'm not the first person to observe this. I think I remember a writer, Nick Mamatov, who might have been the first person that I saw bring it up. But, you know, one of the most famous cyberpunk science fiction novels, Neuromancer by William Gibson, the first opening line, and actually that line's referenced in Cabin at the end of the world, is the sky was the color of a TV set, you know, turned to a dead channel. You know, so if you're of a certain age, that brings up an image that is already there. But even if you're not of a certain age, sort of that language is all throughout Neuromancer, and it's really serves to build sort of the world of that story. So I guess, sorry, I tend to ramble. But the short answer is, you know, I don't worry about a dated story. I worry more about whatever detail is going to be in there. It needs to be in there for a reason. That's what I spend all my time focusing on, as opposed to what are people going to think about it later.
No, that's good. I mean, we see a lot of submissions, you know, and we've had countless. The last 18 months, how many pandemic-based? And I don't even want to look at them because we're living it. I don't want to bloody well read it as well, you know.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, but I agree. It's funny enough, actually. I ghost wrote a couple of for a client. I ghost wrote a couple of Regency period young adult novels. One was it had a bit of a supernatural twist to it, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, again, because it's such a simpler time, you know, and it was just like you say, no cell phone, not, you know, and the getting your characters from A to B was a whole different, you know, problem, you know, because it was like,
right.
Okay, to keep the pace, you know, like here, you know, they need to go 30 miles into London, not jump in the car, but in those days, you jump on a horse, and it's like a 5-hour trip in a carriage or whatever. It's just,
right.
So, I think I enjoyed it so much. I think what I would like to do at some point is write a grown-up horror based in Regency period, you know, just because, you know, have a werewolf,
yeah,
or
sure,
something just horrific happen, or, you know, demons, or just the sort of thing that I enjoy writing about. But I set it in those times because, and a lot of it, you know, you see the period drama. I know Xtina loves the period dramas, and I'm not a big fan of them on TV. And, you know, they have all these fancy balls and da-di-da, and everybody's like, what they don't tell you is, and I actually research, you know, lavatory habits in, you know, in the early 1800s. And they would have, like, a pot in the corner of the big, you know, ballroom. And they would just go, and squat down and do it in the corner. Like, this is brilliant. The last time I did that, I was arrested. I mean, it's just not, it's not fair. But they skip over that. And they show London. But London in that time, before the sewers were put in, was disgusting. You know, the streets were ankle deep in shit. And it was just like, yeah, but that's the sort of, you know, that's what I would bring out, you know?
Yeah.
I was going to ask, I mean, Xtina mentioned also about characters. How do you develop your characters? Or do they just march into your head fully formed?
You know, they usually start with, a super rough sketch. And to me, they don't really sort of become, like, characters until I start presenting them, like, problems or you know, they have to make decisions or say things, and to me that's when they start, you know, becoming characters. I don't know, when I first started writing, I was really like, I pretty much only did first person, and I think part of it was because that close, you know, because I never had any training in writing, so I was like, well, first person is, that's how I see the world, like that's how like for me it was a good lesson in characters, like if I'm going to write as a first person, how am I going to build these other characters that the narrator is talking about, and the narrator can only really know these characters by what they say and what they do. And so, I don't know, even if it's not first person, I kind of take that approach of, this is, you know, I have, like, I guess I start with some parameters, but then that's how they become, you know, who they are. To me, is really once I get into the story.
I do have a feeling that Wen just jumped right off the pages. She's very, you know, we've mentioned it before on the show about how, you know, there's pieces and parts of us in everything we write.
Sure.
And it's really interesting now when I can read somebody and my mind starts to work and I'm like, well, I wonder, you know, how much of this is, you know, is he, you know what I mean? Yeah. How much? So,
right.
You know, reading about Wen, I like her. She's a cool little girl. And I hope nothing bad happens to her. I'm just going to, you know, I haven't gotten too far.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so,
right.
But I'm anxious to hear more. And I think that, I think we have a reading. Do you have an excerpt ready for us, Paul?
Yeah, I do. I guess, shoot, I was going to say something briefly. Yeah, I mean, I think all my, you know, really quickly, like, all my characters have, like, little pieces of me or pieces that I know. But, you know, for me, the fun part is that they do become sort of their own
Definitely.
Characters when they start saying and doing things. And this book, Cabin at the End of the World, is really, like, it's the third book of, I wouldn't call it a trilogy because every book is totally different plot-wise. But it's the third book that is about families and distress. You know, A Head Full of Ghosts features, you know, family with two kids, and then Disappearance of Devil's Rock has a single mom with her two kids, and then this book. So I know for me, like, I've always been obsessed as a parent myself, been just one of my obsessions, like stories involving families and what it feels like to be a kid and what it feels like to be a parent. You know, I've been a teacher for as long as I've been a, you know, a professional. So, like, I've always been around kids. So, in some sense, like, at least for a while, like, writing kids, I felt more comfortable doing so, but not, like, in a YA manner. But anyway, sorry to ramble. But, all right, I'm going to read just a little bit from the very first chapter. So we get it, like, get to meet one a little bit. Excuse me. So this is from chapter one, which is titled When. The girl with the dark hair walks down the wooden front stairs and lowers herself into the yellowing lagoon of ankle-high grass. A warm breeze ripples through the blades, leaves, and crab-like petals of clover flowers. She studies the front yard, watching for the twitchy mechanical motion and frantic jumps of grasshoppers. The glass jar cradled against her chest smells faintly of grapey on the inside. She unscrews the aerated lid. Wen promised Daddy Andrew she would release the grasshoppers before they got cooked inside the homemade terrarium. The grasshoppers will be okay because she'll make sure to keep the jar out of direct sunlight. She worries, though, that they could hurt themselves by jumping into the sharp edges of the lid's punched-in holes. She'll catch smaller grasshoppers, ones that don't jump as high or as powerfully, and because of their compact size, there will be more leg-stretching room inside the jar. She will talk to the grasshoppers in a low, soothing voice, and hopefully they will be less likely to panic and mash themselves against the dangerous metal stalactites. Satisfied with her updated plan, she pulls up a fistful of grass, roots and all, leaving a pockmark in the front yard's sea of green and yellow. She carefully deposits and arranges the grass in the jar, then wipes her hands on her gray Wonder Woman t-shirt. Wen's eighth birthday is in 6 days. Her dad's not so secretly wonder if the day is her actual date of birth or one assigned to her by the orphanage in China's Hubei province. Wen is as direct and determined as she is athletic and wiry, often besting her dad in battles of wills and in scripted wrestling matches on their bed. Her eyes are a deep, dark brown with thin caterpillar eyebrows that wiggle on their own. Along the right edge of her philtrum is the hint of a scar that is only visible in a certain light, and if you know, to look for it. The thin light slash is the remaining evidence of a cleft lip repaired with multiple surgeries between the ages of 2 and 4. She remembers the first and final trips to the hospital, but not the ones in between. That those middle visits and procedures have been somehow lost bothers her. Wen is friendly, outgoing, and as goofy as any other child her age, but isn't easy with her reconstructed smiles. Her smiles have to be earned. Wen searches for a sixth grasshopper, she hears someone walking or jogging on the forever-long dirt road that winds by the cabin and traces the lake's shoreline before sneaking off into the surrounding woods. When she and her parents arrived 2 days ago, it took them 21 minutes and 49 seconds to drive the length of the dirt road. Wen timed it. Granted, Daddy Eric was driving way too slowly, like always. The sounds of feet mashing and grinding into the dirt and stone are louder. Closer. Something big is trudging its way down the road. Really big. Daddy Eric made her promise she would yell for them and run inside if she saw any animal bigger than a squirrel. Should she be excited or scared? She doesn't see anything through the crowd of trees. Wen stands in the middle of the lawn, ready to run if necessary. Is she fast enough to get inside the cabin if it is a dangerous animal? She hopes it's a bear. She wants to see one. She can play dead if she has to. A man rounds the bend and walks briskly down the driveway, like he's coming home. Wen is not a good judge of height, as all adults exist in that cloud-filled space above her, but he is easily taller than her dad's. He might be taller than anyone she has ever met, and he's as wide as a couple of tree trunks pushed together. The man waves with a hand that might as well be a bear's paw, and he smiles at Wen. And I'll stop there.
No, don't stop. No, see, I really, when I was reading it the first time, and, you know, I connected with Wen. I did, because when I was a kid, I was their only child, and there wasn't a whole lot of kids in the apartment complex that we lived in. There was a bunch of older people, and that's where I was. I was in the backyard, and I collected, you know, grasshoppers and pretty much any kind of insect I could find, and, you know, So, yeah, I was right away. I was like, this is a real kid. This isn't just some, you know, kid he's written about, which I love that when I can read an author and their characters just say to me, this is not just a, yeah, a book, you know, character. And
right.
It's a real person. So, yeah, I'm very much, yeah, definitely. And I have to, this is a fun little bit of a trivia here. For my birthday last year, I got not one, but two copies of Head Full of Ghosts. So both of my kids got me the book for my birthday last year. So
what amazing kids. I love them.
I know. They are pretty great. They are, yeah. But, yeah, so you have to tell us what you're working on now.
Yeah, so my next novel is due to be published July 5th, so this summer. It's called The Pallbearers Club. It's a little bit different than the last two books. Like Cabin at the End of the World takes place in like 24 hours. And Survivor Song, which came out a couple years ago, takes place over like 6 hours. So this book starts in the late 80s and comes up to present time. Anyway, so the conceit of The Pallbearers Club is that it's presented as a found memoir. Like this character who calls himself Art Barbara, that's not really his name. That's what he calls himself. And honestly, the name just sort of cracks me up in a Boston accent. In a Boston accent, it's, hey, it's Aunt Barbara.
I like it.
So I hope there is some humor to this book, which is a little bit different, too. Like, I wouldn't necessarily call it a horror comedy, because when you say horror comedy, I think most people think, oh, the horror parts are the funny parts. My hope is that, you know, what's supposed to be funny is funny, and what's supposed to be scary is scary. But anyway, so
right.
I'm already
yes.
glad not. I'm terrible at, like, the elevator pitch or the quick summation, so I'll try again. So this guy, Art Barbara, he's writing about when the memoir opens with him as a senior in high school in 1988. You know, he's sort of a self-identifying loser without any friends in high school. Mm-hmm. And he's desperate for some extracurricular activities, so he comes up with one on his own. And he decides to start what's called the Pallbearers Club, where, you know, he'll volunteer at a local funeral home to serve homeless and elderly that don't have a lot of living or any living relatives. And he isn't really able to get very many people to join, but eventually an older woman, a strange older woman joins. You know, maybe she's like a year or two older, college age, or maybe more, he's not sure. And so this woman becomes a friend of his and maybe even like a frenemy over... And she sort of looms over his life for the next, you know, three, almost four decades. And this
wow.
character, I'll just call M for now. You know, she has a name in the book, but I don't want to necessarily say it. So most of the book is Art's memoir, but at the end of every chapter, M sort of comments on the chapter that just ended. And she also eventually just starts, like, writing notes within the margins itself. Which hopefully is fun for the reader. I always like finding, you know, having marginalia and stuff like that in books. I think are kind of fun. This friend M may or may not be a supernatural creature from New England folklore. I guess mm-hmm. is sort of the horror side of things. So now that I've thoroughly confused what the book is about, that's what the Pallbearers Club is about anyway.
I'm more intrigued now, I think. I do like it.
Thanks.
Yeah. But you mentioned the margins, and it made
yeah.
me think of the house the House of Leaves. Have you
House
did you
of
read
Leaves,
that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm a,
yeah,
I love that book, yes.
Really? I have it and I have started it a couple times, and I can't say I'm not enjoying it, but I do get a little confused. And then sometimes
it's
I don't know. I belong to a Facebook group about the House of Leaves, and I can't help but be a little spooked every time, like, I see a post from there. So, like, every time I pick it up and I get, like, 50 pages in, I'm like, I don't know, I might be a little spooked here, you know. So then I put it down for a little bit. Yeah, I love horror, but I'm also a big chicken shit. So, you know, to balance, I have to.
Yeah, no, so am I. Yeah, and I would say, like, I mean, I love, like, the typographical tricks, and I shouldn't say tricks, but the usages in House of Leaves. And, you know, in that book, there's like four different stories sort of weaving into one. And, you know, in this book, it's definitely not that. It's not as complicated plot-wise. Like, you won't have an issue following what's going on with the story. That's not to say there isn't hopefully some, like, complicated emotions and other things going on, but, yeah.
Now, I know this is a pretty cliched question, but I do always want to know, where do you get your inspiration?
Oh, I mean, I try to stay open to it from everywhere, which, you know, I hope it doesn't sound like too trite of an answer, but, like, I don't know, I'm fascinated by influence and where it comes from. Like, so, like A Head Full of Ghosts that I wrote, you know, referenced just about every horror movie and book that I could think of. Because that was part of, that ended up being part of the story. Like, I never really told you what was happening. And typically in an ambiguous book, you know, you think of ambiguity as withholding information from the reader. And I tried to do the total opposite with A Head Full of Ghosts, where I give you too much information. It's like, you know, living, it mirrors what it's like to live today, where we're just, you know, bombarded with this glut of information. How do we know what's real or what's not real? And for me, like, my stories are sort of, I kind of like, I love taking that sort of glut of influence. Like, so, like, depends on the story, but I often get inspiration from other books, other movies. Music is a huge inspiration for me. Actually, the Paul Bearers Club, in a way, is me trying to relive or have a second life as a punk rock musician, which is, I think, I would have rather have been. I mean, I love writing, don't get me wrong, but if I could have been a somewhat successful punk musician, I think I would have chosen that. I often go to music for inspiration. But, you know, I use, much to my wife's chagrin, I've used the kids, I've used our vacation, you know, Cabin at the End of the World is one, it's like a vacation house that we stayed at, you know, just a physical building. So, yeah, anything that sparks an idea, I try to be open to it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, we had a guest on one time, and when I asked that question, it was a Seinfeld episode. They got the inspiration from the science. So, I mean, that's why I love to hear the answer to that, because there's so many different answers. And, you know, so badly now I want to know which episode it was, and they wouldn't tell me. So,
right.
But, we have this this trip we take every couple of months. I live in Tennessee, and we take a trip into North Carolina. And there's this one house when and it's set up on the hill, and there's a bunch of woods surrounding it, so you can just barely see this house, you know. And there's a story there. I just have not figured out what it is yet, but there's something there. Yeah. And every time I go past it, I'm like, oh gosh, I want the story to like start screaming loudly or something, because it's definitely calling to me. So I do love to hear.
Well, I was specific to cabin, really interestingly. When I came up with the idea, I had just pitched a novel idea to my editor through my agent, and I wasn't in love with it. And the pitch was way too long; it was like 30 pages. I practically wrote the thing. it was more like a summary of what they wanted, and she rejected it. And I was kind of like relieved, because I knew she wasn't. You know, she still wanted to see more stuff from me, so I knew it wasn't like, oh, this was it. And I was actually on a plane back. I was visiting stuff in Los Angeles, and on the plane back, I just had a notebook out and I was doodling, and I drew a little cabin in my notebook. And when I say drew a cabin, like I drew a rectangle with a triangle on top of it, because I'm not an artist. But I looked at the doodle, I was like, oh, cabin. Like, my mind instantly went to Home Invasion. And I was like, oh, you know, Home Invasions are actually kind of like one of my least favorite horror sort of subgenres. Not that, I mean, there's some that I do like, but in general, I just find them too scary, too icky. So I was weirdly excited by that. I was like, oh, how would I write one? Like, you know, if I don't like them, let's write one that you would like, or that you'd want to sit through, kind of thing. And that was really the way that book started. And even with, to go back to influence, the opening paragraph that I read is the first paragraph of Lord of the Flies, rewritten and repurposed, you know, with Wen lowering herself into the grass instead of the schoolboy lowering himself into actual water, which is what starts You know, the book is different plot-wise from Lord of the Flies, but I just wanted the feel of that book
right.
somehow. Like, even just if, you know, even if it just fooled me into it, like, I wanted to try to put some of the tense feelings that I get when I read that book, try to, you know, put splice that into mine somehow.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, you know, I'm not one for symbolism and stuff. I really wish I was. You know, did you? Yeah. One of the questions I love to ask our horror authors is, what is your favorite Stephen King novel, if you have one? It's okay to not.
I mean, I think it'll probably always be The Stand, just because it was the first one, that was the book that really turned me into a reader, was reading The Stand. Mm. So I don't know. After that, though, I'm not sure. I mean, Pet Sematary, maybe. But also, I love his short stories. Yeah.
Mm. Good answers, good answers. Not the typical ones, but I'll accept them.
All right.
And so you said your new book is coming out in July. We would love to have you back. So this is where I awkwardly say you have to promise to come back, and then you say you will.
Yeah, definitely. If the schedule allows, like, we'll see, yeah. But, yeah, I don't see,
awesome.
See why not.
Awesome, awesome. And, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've had a great time with you. Tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Sure. So my website's paultremblay.net. I have a free newsletter, and I don't spam your inbox very often, usually like once a month, if you want to sign up there. Also, I'm on Twitter at Paul G. Tremblay, and Instagram, same handle, at Paul G. Tremblay, where I post pictures of my dog, Holly. She's really the star of the Instagram page.
I'll have to find you and follow you. I love dogs. So for all of our listeners out there, go out there and buy The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. And I can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Paul. Have a great evening. Speak to you again.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was brilliant. I thought we're jolly entertaining.
I did laugh. I did laugh a few times. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know, is that vain when you laugh at your own show?
No,
I don't know if it is.
No, it means good, you know. I just get fun. It's nice to occasionally get to listen to ourselves a little bit. But it's sort of got a lot of time's running away from us. I think we need to bring on the lovely Samantha Hawkins now, so because I'm sure she's got something to review. So here we go.
Oh, hey. Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
Hey,
everybody.
Lovely Samantha.
Hey.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
How are you? I'm good. How are you all?
We're good.
Are you staying
warm? Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody's keeping warm.
I'm trying. We're in the process of, like, this huge ice storm, so.
Mm.
Yeah. It's just missing us. I'm glad. You know, I think tomorrow we're getting up to, like, 50 degrees, so it's totally missing us, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
I'm secretly hoping for a snow day. We're already on a two-hour delay.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you. I will.
Yes, no, thank
so
you.
So what do you have to review for us tonight?
Well, I had chosen Survivor Song. I did try to read The Cabin at the End of the World, but that one just wasn't for me, so I went with this one. And I liked this one. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. But it was like a good solid 3.5 star for me. It was like a slow burn. It's very slow burn. It has like a Walking Dead feel, and then it has like a toxin feel. It's weird to read books like that set in like these times because we're living it now. And I feel like I do a lot of comparison because there were a lot of things in the book with like checkpoints and security and like the hospital and protocols really. And like seeing how things are now, it's like it wouldn't be that way. But I did see, you know, where he had said he'd wrote it before all of this. So you probably shouldn't compare too hard there. But it has, you know, even though it's slow burn, it does have some, like, good build-up action. There's some parts where you're like really wondering what's going to happen. But ultimately, I felt like the ending was really anticlimactic. I hoped for an ending that just wasn't there. But I did really like the two main characters. I really liked the doctor the best. I felt like she really did everything she could to help her friend Natalie. And the whole world is set in this, like, it's a rabies-like virus, but it's not rabies. So everybody's kind of in, like, lockdown, and the hospitals are kind of like we are right now, but it's rabies instead of COVID.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, you talk about the slow burn, and I like a slow burn. I really do. I know that, like, my the boyfriend, he does not. You know, if we're watching something and there's a slow burn, he's just, you know, he'd rather be doing anything else. And me, I am captivated, you know, by the slow burn.
Oh, no, it has
to strike
me the right way.
I guess it's, you know, I'm, you know, they say there's something for everyone and not everyone, you know, likes the same thing, which is, you know, but yeah, me, I think for me, a slow burn is like, I have to read the next page and the next page because it's a slow burn and I have to know what happens next, you know? And so, yeah.
No, there's
yeah.
definitely parts like that where, you know, as you're reading, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And especially towards the end, there's that real heavy, like Walking Dead feel. Oh my God, is that really happening? but overall, I really feel like, you know, it's definitely a slow burn book, but I did enjoy it. I really did.
Awesome. Awesome. I am glad. And, yeah, you know, I was thinking we're going to have more time because I was going to totally do 11 questions with you. But, one of these nights when, maybe one of our guests calls in sick or something, we're going to have like some, you know, just, you know, us and Samantha time and we're going to have a lot of fun. But,
yes.
Yeah. And I hope that you stay warm, and, you know, even if you get your snow day, I still hope you stay warm. And, I can't wait to talk to you again next week, Samantha. Thank you so much.
Yes, no, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We'll speak to you next week.
We love you. Alrighty, guys.
We love you. Okay, she's building a building a path up now. It is, unfortunately, it is time for us to go. Time has beaten us. Time has beaten us. I had a great time with Paul and the lovely Samantha. And we need to book more time next time, actually. Stop being skimpy on the time.
I will.
On that note, it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Here's my story. It's sad but true. It's about a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town.
Hey, hey, whoa. Away from a run around Sue.